This critique examines Letting the Wound Update the Model, a transdisciplinary white paper applying Carl Friston's free energy principle to how political and institutional systems maintain themselves by, well, either denying or learning from the evidence of human suffering. And since the material makes such a strong case for life-coherent civilizational design by showing how systems pathologically suppress evidence of harm, let's just dive directly into how we can strengthen the structural impact of this masterful synthesis.
Absolutely. So to jump right into the first critique, the transition from individual cognitive processes to institutional behavior requires a more robust bridging mechanism to fully convince skeptical readers.
Yeah, I mean, the text makes a pretty massive theoretical leap early on.
It really does.
We start with Friston's concepts of the free energy principle and active inference, which are, you know, deeply rooted in individual neuroscience and biology.
Right. They explain how a single organism minimizes uncertainty.
Exactly. But then within a few pages, those concepts are suddenly scaled up to describe the behavior of entire nation states and global market ecosystems.
And the author does mention that a state is not a brain, acknowledging that gap. And they bring in social cognition concepts like, you know, regimes of expectation.
Yeah.
But pointing at the gap isn't the same as building a bridge across it. The text sort of glosses over the exact mechanical friction of this transition. It leaves this massive open question.
Which is?
Well, how exactly does a specific, rigid macro institution coerce an empathetic individual inside of it to participate in what the paper calls pathological self-evidencing?
Right. It feels a bit like explaining a citywide traffic jam solely by analyzing the internal combustion engine of a single car.
That's a great way to put it.
Like, we understand how the car moves, but we're missing the traffic rules, right? The localized traffic lights, the badly designed on-ramps that force all those individual cars into a gridlock.
Right. If active inference says an organism reduces uncertainty by making the world fit its internal model, we need to map the exact moment a bureaucracy forces a human being to ignore their own sensory evidence.
Just to protect the bureaucracy's model.
Exactly. So the suggestion here is to fortify this conceptual bridge by explicitly detailing those meso-level institutional mechanics.
You mean getting into the weeds of it?
Yeah. The direct incentive structures, the mundane administrative procedures or, you know, liability fears that literally force individual compliance into pathological self-evidencing.
So consider how this plays out in a hospital triage scenario. You have a doctor, an individual organism, whose life-coherent instinct is to treat an undocumented patient who is visibly suffering right there in the waiting room.
Right. The doctor registers this physical evidence perfectly.
Yeah. Their internal model says this person needs repair. But then they are required to interface with the hospital's administrative software.
Which brings us to the concept of precision waiting. In neuroscience, precision waiting is how the brain turns down the volume on unreliable sensory data and turns up the volume on data it thinks is important.
Right.
The text uses this beautifully in the abstract, but the hospital software provides a chance to show it working in physical reality.
Because the software literally functions as the institution's precision waiting mechanism.
Exactly.
Let's say the drop-down menu on the intake screen doesn't have a code for life-coherent repair. It only has binary codes for, you know, insured or uninsured, and maybe a metric for legal liability.
So the software mechanically turns down the volume on the patient's immediate physical suffering.
Right. Treating it as statistical noise. And simultaneously, it cranks up the volume on the hospital's fiscal discipline and risk management.
It externalizes the uncertainty onto the patient. The doctor is coerced by the interface, right? And the threat of termination and the hospital's legal framework.
They're forced to participate in the institutional pathology.
Yeah. The doctor's ethical prediction error is literally suppressed by the system's design. If the author traces that exact sequence from the doctor's empathy to the administrator's drop-down menu, the theoretical bridge becomes undeniable.
I love that. And you know, that missing meso-level bridge actually exposes another structural issue in the text.
Oh?
Yeah. Once we establish that we need to see how institutions override individuals, it becomes apparent that the paper's current real-world examples operate at the wrong altitude.
Right. The selected case studies lean so heavily on macro geopolitical conflicts that the diagnostic grammar risks appearing applicable only to international crises.
Yeah, Section 10 explicitly claims that these Fristonian tools can be applied to everyday systems. You know, families, local schools, corporations. But if you look at the highly detailed cases in Sections 7, 8, and 9, it's all Palestine, Cuba, Sudan, Haiti, Mediterranean migration.
Right. Entirely geopolitical, macroeconomic, international law-focused traumas.
Exactly. This creates a massive scale mismatch.
Yeah. By exclusively focusing on massive, highly polarized geopolitical traumas, the text inadvertently obscures the universal everyday utility of its framework.
It makes it harder for a reader to imagine applying these tools to their local civic environments.
But let me push back on that for a second, just to play devil's advocate.
Sure, go for it.
Is there a risk that if we include a micro case study, we might dilute the urgent moral weight of the situations in Gaza or Sudan? Does scaling down to a local bureaucracy cheapen the argument about state-sanctioned violence?
I get that concern, totally. But I would argue the exact opposite happens.
Really?
Yeah. By refusing to ground the theory in relatable, everyday systems, the author allows the reader to treat the pathology as something that only happens over there, in war zones.
Oh, I see what you mean.
The suggestion is to introduce at least one micro or meso-level case study earlier in the text. Anchor the Fristonian concepts in everyday institutional reality before scaling up to global conflicts.
Right. Because if you prove the physics of this pathology in a small system, its presence in a global system becomes an undeniable structural inevitability.
Exactly. It's not just a political failure. It's a systemic feature. Think about a telecom company's automated phone tree.
Oh, yeah.
It's a mundane, everyday example of institutional anesthesia. You call because their installation truck backed over your mailbox, right?
Uh-huh.
But the automated voice only offers options for billing, tech support, or upgrades. The system literally lacks the generative model to perceive your specific injury.
Right. You press zero, you yell into the receiver, but the system just hangs up.
It refuses to let your external reality update its internal model of efficiency.
That's a perfect example. Apply the diagnostic grammar to a domestic, relatable case. Like, say, a local municipal government ignoring evidence of a poisoned water supply.
Yes.
They do it to preserve their fiscal discipline or reputational integrity.
Walk through how a specific corporation suppresses a whistleblower's evidence of ecological harm.
Right. Detail exactly how the corporation lowers the precision of the testimony. They don't just passively ignore the whistleblower. They act on the world to make their model true.
Right. The PR and legal departments actively label the whistleblower as disgruntled or unstable.
They actively destroy the source of the life evidence so that their internal model of profitability and progress remains undisturbed.
That's spot on. And you know, bringing the theory down to relatable, actionable case studies perfectly sets up the final challenge.
Which is?
Ensuring that the author's proposed solutions are just as actionable and organized as their diagnostics.
Ah, yes. The practical architecture for self-correcting institutions presents a formidable inventory of concepts that would benefit from a more integrated, sequential framework.
Formidable is a good word for it. Section 11 outlines 18 distinct elements for building self-correcting institutions.
Yeah, ranging from life evidence as a primary signal and protected witnessing, all the way to anti-capture design and law as a learning system.
It's an absolute powerhouse of ideas. But currently, it reads as a rapid-fire flattened list rather than a cohesive implementation guide.
It really does. It diffuses the actionable impact, leaving policymakers or institutional designers or activists overwhelmed.
Completely overwhelmed. They're unsure of where to initiate the self-correction cycle within their own systems.
It's an assembly problem, honestly. Handing someone 18 brilliant principles is like handing them 18 state-of-the-art engine parts without the assembly manual.
Yeah, you wouldn't know which piece to pick up first.
Exactly. The suggestion here is to group these 18 architectural elements into a phased operational life cycle, or a tiered hierarchy of implementation.
Moving from immediate diagnostic sensing to long-term systemic memory.
Right. So we could reorganize those 18 points into three distinct phases.
Okay, walk me through that.
So, phase one, sensory redesign.
This could encompass elements like life evidence as a primary signal, precision reversal, and protected witnessing.
Oh, I see. Because a system can't correct a harm it can't perceive. You need the sensory data first.
Exactly. Then phase two, processing and correction. Here, you could cluster independent correction loops, anti-capture design, and participatory model revision.
Right. So once the signal is received, how does the institution metabolize that error without falling into denial?
Precisely. And then phase three, material output and systemic memory.
Okay.
This is where you group reparative accountability, institutional memory, and law as a learning system.
That makes so much sense. It transforms a daunting 18-point list into a step-by-step civilizational blueprint.
It really does. And it mirrors the cognitive process itself. Sense the perturbation, update the internal model, and then act on the world.
Right. So just to recap our three main actionable suggestions for the author today. First, clarify the theoretical bridge by detailing the meso-level mechanics.
Right. Show us exactly how administrative procedures force individuals into institutional pathology.
Second, introduce micro-level case studies to prove the everyday utility of the diagnostic grammar alongside those massive geopolitical cases.
Anchoring it in reality.
Yes. And third, reorganize the 18-point practical architecture into a phased sequential implementation guide.
Phase one, phase two, phase three.
Exactly. I want to remind the listener that the underlying synthesis of neuroscience and political philosophy here is already incredibly profound.
Oh, absolutely.
These structural tweaks will only maximize its real-world impact. We'd love to invite the listener to submit their revised text back to the critique for further feedback, because ultimately, letting the wound update the model is the only way these systems will survive.